Tempest was finally certain of it. Nico was just learning who and what he was, but Tempest had seen the future, tonight, clearer than Artan ever could. Did Nico realize what it meant that he wasn't frozen between blinks, helpless before the Dream Lord? That he could draw his sword? Even Jihan had been entrapped by Ash this time. Lord of Dream and Shadow, and Teleki of the Seventh Sphere, how much more havoc had Ascalon hoped to wreak? More. Getting up off your knees to fight another day, so far as Tempest was concerned, was still winning in any battle. In Tempest's head, something rustled and growled and shifted. Enlil had come to the party. "So, Enlil, what do you think of my partner now? Perhaps you should have kept him closer, done more for him when you had him to yourself. Fighting the Lord of Dreams, I'll need him, and all the help I can get." Now the god Enlil, so silent for so long, rattled in his skull and came up in his eyes and looked all around and said, "What was mine is still mine. The Shanka is a child. Harmony is a female. Whatsoever is thine is mine. And you, arrogant servant, best not forget it, for I am always with thee, wheresoever thou art. Have faith in me, rely on me, and only me, in the battles yet to come, forever and ever." Poor Kouris. For once, Lysis felt superior to this Bandaran-trained stepson, god's son or not. No Theban deity would ever require such an act from a believer. There were so many people in the little chapel, too many. Oligarchs and priests and noble women and priestesses and more sat and stood against the walls. In the front row, on chairs carefully chosen, Artan sat next to Lysis as a drum began to beat and Kouris entered in slow and measured strides, wearing golden armor and the conical hat of Vashanka's kingship in heaven. Lysis stuffed his hand into his mouth far enough to bite his knuckles. Critias had warned him what disciplinary action awaited him if he laughed aloud. Artan kicked him in the shins, and it hurt right through his greaves. Pipes played, lutes thrummed, the rhythm picked up, pulsing as torch holders strode in, pigeon-breasted, chest stuck out, a golden mace in his hand. The priest pumped the mace up and down, conducting the music and the procession behind Kouris. Then the priest stopped the music with a loud rap upon the marble floor. Silence. "Giscares, son of Ashanka, favorite of the Storm God, Lord of Sack and Pillage," intoned Torchholder, while behind him red smoke belched from censers. Lysis hugged himself, his stomach hurt from trying so hard not to laugh. Kouris looked as if he'd been caught trying on his father's best panoply. Then in came the priestesses, beautiful young girls, spiraling like tops in only veils and chains. And Artan elbowed him. "Look at them!" But Lysis could hardly see through his tears. He wanted to tell Artan to look at fat old torch holder strutting like a peacock, but he couldn't get out the words. Then he chanced another glance at Chorus, who was doing some sort of two-step with the foremost priestess. Chorus was now half-naked, his golden armor discarded, wearing only a shiny loin-guard and ceremonial sword. It was too much for Lysis. He bit his hand to keep from laughing. Priestesses came swirling around Chorus, touching him all over. Artan said, "Look! Look, oh look! Look at that!" And Lysis saw what Artan meant when he said, "That."
"It'll never work. Never fit, I mean. Oh, oh, goddess, he's not going to get up in there."
From directly behind them, Stratton growled, "He'd better get up and get in there, or we're all in a lot of trouble," and hit Lysis's tailbone with his knee.
"That's just exactly what he's going to do," Lysis chortled to Artan, taking a chance. "Get up in there."
Music played, louder this time. The chosen nubile priestess had gold paint on her breasts that made her nipples look like eyes, and she was up in the chariot, clinking her little chain bracelets. Her delicate veils did nothing to hide any part of her. Her rump was against the highest point of the car's bumper, and it was a very shapely rump, Lysis had to admit. Chorus was handed up into the car by Torchholder and some old oligarch and an aged priestess. Then that beautiful girl draped herself over the chariot, bent nearly double, stomach on the bumper's rim, arms reaching for the center pole.
"Look, look, look!" Artan whispered wonderingly. "He's not. Oh, he is!"
With a great rumbling flash, a thunderhead appeared inside the chapel, as if it had issued from the head of the storm god statue. Lightning crackled and crawled along the chapel walls. Women yelped. Priestesses scattered. Lysis rubbed his eyes and looked again. The thunderhead had descended over Chorus and the girl. Inside the cloud, lightning flashed. Lysis could see two shapes, then one shape. In the cloud. From the cloud came girlish wails and sobbing and begging and moaning and groaning. Now a man growled in a voice too deep and fierce to be Chorus, saying things that Lysis wasn't allowed to say, and reciting some hymn which included the phrase, "Lettuce is your hair." And that did it. Lysis doubled over in a fit, laughing silently until his eyes ran with tears and his stomach convulsed, and Stratton from behind cuffed him soundly on the back of his head. But he couldn't help it. The creature in the cloud cover was eight-limbed and thumping. The chariot rocked as if it would break loose from its anchors. Then it was still. As the cloud dissipated, people began first politely and then enthusiastically to cheer. And when Lysis looked at what they were cheering for, he started laughing all over again.
"Someone ought to bring him a rag," Stratton groused to Crit, "or a robe."
Now priestesses were taking around a piece of red-stained cloth, showing the result of the ceremony, pride in their painted eyes, their breasts heaving. Artan had fallen silent. Lysis looked over at his new right man. The seer wasn't laughing anymore. Artan said, "Lysis, what am I going to do?"
"You? Nothing."
Lysis didn't understand, and then he did.
"Don't worry, Artan.
I promise, when it's your turn, no one will be watching you." The blood on the ceremonial cloth clearly attested to success. After the cloth was retired, the priest spoke loudly of how important this ritual was for sanctuary and its Vashenken congregation. Giscaris was marched away, surrounded by dancing virgins. The guests got up, congratulating one another, and Lysis was free at last to laugh. But by then Critias and Stratton were wondering how that thunderhead had massed inside a building, and how it had been cajoled to descend and cover the ceremonial mating or to illuminate the copulating couple. And no one had an answer for that question, or so many others. Was the storm god Vashenka really here, in this chapel? Was the god inside Chorus now? And if so, was this god really the berserker god, lord of sack and pillage? Whatever that might mean for sanctuary, it might not be good for Lysis's friend Chorus, who had seemed so depleted and dazed when the priest pulled a robe around him and led him away amid whirling priestesses and rejoicing spectators. Nika was dead. Now he is not. He's nearly certain of both. He is nearly sure that he's alive, not in some unending dream of immortality. The night air is so soft now that the rain has stopped. The breeze seems so sweet to him as they get their horses from the palace stable. All the smells of horse and straw and hay and life, treasure beyond measure, gifts beyond price. He'd almost died before. Almost. Abarsis, the slaughter priest, had come to sit with him, tousled his hair, and death had gone hungry that day. But he'd never taken a last breath before. Never hung between heaven and hell before, until she came into his life and changed it, came all the way from Chironea. Men, staggering back impaled moaning, came with the Thebans. She was on the Chironean battle plain, the Thebans said, came from heaven. Now everything was different. He was. And she didn't come tonight. Sink, the horse tamer, had a woman with him at the palace stables as the celebration was winding down. Thick hair, blonde and grey. A weathered face once beautiful, now regal. A vital body, muscled and strong. She was helping Sink get the band's horses this tiny woman before whom kill-trained stallions dropped their muzzles and came along, meek and mild, at her command. A deadly wench she must have been, but better now with so much wisdom, so deep a soul, as his mot sees her, golden, shining like the sun. He is happy for Sink, the loner, the third commando colonel who had no friends outside the cohort, has found someone at last. Life comes and then departs. He'd always known it, expected no reprieve from death. A secular adept of Mat looks for God in man, seeks only balance within and balance without. Live every day accountable for what you do and what you say. Show heaven your respect for the intelligible light, for supernal order. Try to make things better, if you can. The sacred benders had waged their hard-earned money on who would be the target of malice and opportunity tonight. The majority chose Chorus. The majority was wrong. Crit profited. So did Strat. The gift of life is given once, no more. The Riddler didn't die. He healed. Ascalon had looked into Nico's eyes tonight with a disdain and rage that froze his soul and made his flesh uncertain. Even when Ash had followed Nico to Bandera, the Dreamlord had never threatened him or shown him what there was to fear in shadows. Now he knew. Now he had Ascalon on his track. Not just Shamshi. But he had his Mott and the Riddler on his left. And he was different somehow, in his body, if not his soul. Sink's woman brought Nico the second best troth stud, her eyes blue as the sky when the moon rises early. Behind her, horses milled as 54 sacred banders in the palace stable yard got ready to depart. She said, "I'm Diana. I like your horse." He thanked her, earnestly. He had to stoop to meet her gaze. He took his reins and watched her stride away to get the next mount. She rode like a goddess, Sink had said. Nico knew about goddesses now. The Theban goddess had told him, "You will never be hurt that way again." What did she mean? What could she mean? Tempest knew. Nico didn't want to ask. "My right side partner needs to be able to withstand more than the average fighter. Now you can," his commander had said. "Few have been given such a weapon by the gods or fates before," the goddess had told Tempest. "So he is still what he had been, a weapon of the god. Perhaps he is more, but not enough more to keep the Dreamlord and Shamshi at bay." Strat swung up on his ghost horse. Strat had seen a shod this evening. Pretty as new, and let it pass. Ishad was useful to them now. Crit's wild-eyed chestnut fussed and whinnied as he and Strat started sorting the band for the ride to the barracks. High alert now, forming ranks as if for battle. Crit is laconic, demanding, abrupt. But they know him, they trust him, and everyone obeys. Ascalon had dropped Nico to his knees without a hint of effort. The goddess had brought him back to life, not made him impervious to harm. He was in too deep with powers far beyond his kin, his commander not the least of them. He chides himself. But Nico's Mott knows its instrument, knows he is stronger, changed in ways he cannot yet comprehend. His Mott must recalibrate the weapon that once was stealth, called Nicodemus, and is again. He'd hoped that Harmony would come tonight. He looked and looked, but didn't see her. She came and went as she pleased. Diana sashayed back with the big troth horse and handed the Riddler its reins. Her head reached no higher than his heart. Long spear thunking to flesh. Into the Riddler's breast, one barbed spear pierced the heart of the whole sacred band that day. If Nico could have stopped that spear with his shield on the Kyrenian battle plane, everything might have gone another way. But what happened, happened. So Tempest is changed since then, even bolder, closer to his band. And Nico is changed now, too. Nico's skill has always been in his body and his soul, in his discipline, his mystery. He's struggled to restore balance, bring justice, find refuge in mystic calm, time after time. Nature bred man to die. No one knew it better. He'd never asked for more than life and death with honor. He was not like Tempest, more than a man living on, seeing more than men could bear. One life, one chance, one test of faith. He'd always known his limits. Now he doesn't. Now he is so different. A stranger to himself. He feels the strangeness in every sinew, every muscle, in the way he draws each breath. His commander knows it, too. Sly looks and sidelong glances from the Riddler. Welcome to the club. Thunder pealed from nearby and far away. The skies opened up. Rain came falling down. Kurris had let the storm god into him tonight. Everything was changing. Tempest kneed his horse, and off they went by fours, out through the gate of the gods the way they'd come. Kurris behind Crit on the big blue roan, Gian and Randall riding to Tempest's left, with Tempest and Nico that made 56 mounted fighters, headed to the barracks in the pouring rain. Nico kept waiting for Harmony to show herself for her black horse with its golden muzzle to join them on the road. But she didn't come. Perhaps she'd only been in his life to save it. What can he do now? Go to her altar every day? He's not a man for gods, but he's a man for that goddess. They took the general's road up where he'd found his sable mare when she'd been lost. He'd tried to find that house again with its white columns, and he couldn't. He'd ridden this road with Kurris after the fight in Sham's battle space. Kurris had thought it was the shortest route back to the barracks. Nico hadn't cared by then, with so much blood running out of him, down his leg, leaving a red trail behind. Tonight he wanted to ask the Riddler to help him, to tell him what it meant to be saved by this foreign goddess again. Lying on the Mage Guild pavings, without a hope, paralyzed, he'd wanted so badly not to die that way or live on that way. And she had come, resurrected him. He wished Harmony would appear and explain herself, explain what she did to him. His heart beat strong, his right flank didn't twinge. Old aches he'd lived with so long from this injury or that no longer pained him. But Ascalon had dropped him with a pointing finger, put him on his knees in front of his commander. Best not to expect too much from this resurrected body of his, or risk it profligately, until he and it had come to terms. When they turned off the general's road, there was a glow on the horizon, low in the sky like the torches of an army encamped on a battle plain. They were nearly to the barracks and deep into third watch when a horse and rider came running the other way. Flat out, through the rain. One horse, one rider, headed their way as if Death himself were chasing after. Tempest launched his horse into a gallop. Nico rode apace, calling to the others to keep formation. They'd closed half the distance when the rider called out, "Commander! Riddler! Fire at the barracks!" And Nico didn't need to signal the men behind. Everyone raced homeward as fast as their mounts could go. They were nearly there when a horse leaped out of the underbrush and dashed across the road, coming up on Nico's right. He recognized the big black with its armored rider instantly. Harmony. But there was no time for talk. There was only time to run their mounts as fast as horses would carry them. Toward the barracks, toward home. Fire! End of chapter 40. Chapter 41. Death comes shambling after.
God damn you, Chorus! Bring more rain now! All you can!
Crit shouts. Please, please let my mare be safe. Nico can't find her. Stables afire, and Nico's sable mare is in the flames somewhere, with so many other stepson horses. The heart and soul of the sacred band burning together, screaming together. Each of them has horses, and partners trying to save horses, in the stables. If everybody charges in willy-nilly to save only their beloveds, all will be lost. Critias organizes a bucket brigade. Men tear linen masks from chitons, blindfolds for their mounts. Nico does his best, heeding Crit's hoarse orders, but this fire rages beyond mortal control. Stepsons tie wet linen around their noses and their mouths. Everyone risks death under falling rafters, collapsing lofts, crumbling and lethal as they tumble. Flames breed more flames wherever they land, on horse or man or straw-bedded stall. Fire just kept on falling, from the haylofts, from the rafters, from the roofs, and nothing they could do would stop it. Tempest, like a god himself, raced into flames and out again with this blindfolded horse, or that, with one staggering man and then another, again and again. Jian, right beside him, tried her gift of cold and sleet on screaming horse flesh and blazing timbers, even holding a burning rafter high, while stepsons scuttled under and got safely by with terrified mounts. But sleet won't quench this Greek fire. Naphtha, sticking to whatever it touches, setting flesh and wood and hay ablaze. She and Stratton, mighty strengths, wrestled tirelessly with rearing horses and stricken men, clearing pathways from the burning stables. Randall ran alongside them, his magic parting fire where it could, to make path after path out of the inferno. But it wasn't enough. Not the rain pouring down in torrents, not the Riddler braving fire that would char a man, not Jehan's gift of ice and cold, or Stratton's strength, or Randall's magic, or the storm god's rain, cleared the way to safety. There was some strangeness in the proportion here, some balance out of whack. Where is she? Velvet muscle-tipped in ears, liquid eyes that see his soul and soothe it. Please don't be dead. Don't be hurt. Nico's mot looked at this world of pain and flame and looked away again. Unnatural pain, unnatural flame. His mare was in there, somewhere, in the inferno. But so were so many other horses, and so many men. Stepsons, sacred banders. Over and over Nico told himself that his job wasn't just to save his own, but to save them all, as many as he could. And his mare was deep inside the west stable, hardest to reach. Or perhaps not. Maybe she was already safe, outside. He couldn't get to her stall from where he was. There were too many other stalls, other horses in the way. He had no time to mull it. Horses screaming, men running, water in buckets never enough. black smoke billowing up from the barracks, making men and horses cough and wheeze. Lurid flames, evil, awful light from hell as hungry fire eats up men and horses, hopes and dreams. And Tempest, striding through the chaos with piles of sopping bedsheets, ripping them as he went to rescue terrified horses from fiery stables. 80 stalls, 4 barns, 20 horses each, 2 barns ablaze. My mare is in there somewhere. He has other horses, rides other mounts. He should love them all the same, but he doesn't. No one does. Your horse saves you, you save it, and that love is a partnership like no other. Your horse lends its strength, you lend your purpose, and together you are so much more. With the right horse, with that love unlike any other. Black clouds of char, choking smoke sears eyes and noses, closing throats, dropping men to their knees, who breathe that smoke too long. Lightning flashes in sheets of rage. More icy rain, whirling, skirling gusts through doors and windows and cindering roofs and rafters. The storm gods pitch in, bringing torrents, rain in a deluge. Thunder masks the screams of horses still in their stalls. Nico couldn't count how many times he went into those barns or how many burns he had. No matter where he went, he never saw his mare. So many rafters fell and shingles fluttered down, aflame like the stalls and the hay. Men ran in with rags, swathed horses' eyes and heads, dragged them out, kicking and screaming, to lead them outside the barracks' walls. "Mare, where are you?" He'd grab a horse, fight it, push it by the rump, beat it if he had to get it to move forward, blindfold it, halter it, drag it from its stall. When he doesn't have enough rags, he tears his chlamys, his chitin. He's stripped to the waist, soaking himself each time before he runs back into the conflagration. Even wet linen and wool can catch fire in this heat. Stepsons are everywhere, in the pall of noxious smoke, stamping out flaming chunks of wood and hay, soaking embers when they fall, beating out sparks and flakes of burning straw on horse and man and wood. Finally, there was no man or horse left alive in the westmost barn. The inline barn next to it still smoked, but the worst of the fire there was out, thanks to Chorus and Jihan and the gods for the rain in gusts, on a wind that drives that rain everywhere, soaking everything, man and horse alike. Now there was nothing left to save except the offices and the living quarters. Everyone pitched in, trying to stomp out each spark and ember on the west side of the compound. "Where's my mare?" Nico couldn't unravel what had happened until Sink told him. The shed they'd built for the naphtha had exploded, no one knew how or why, and blazing naphtha fireballs arcing high had landed on the roofs of the stables, of the living quarters, everywhere. Or so said the stepsons who had been there. And the new mercenaries and Thebans all agreed. Unlikely story, Nico thought. They'd purposely built the shed of earth at the easternmost end of the barracks compound so this couldn't happen. But happen it did. and the rain still pelted down as if the gods themselves were trying to help drown the fire. Jihan took that rain and chilled it, adding sleet of her own in gust after gust, calling on her father, Stormbringer, for aid. Soon enough the inner courtyard was treacherous to man and beast, but the roofs were soaked, and the last blaze in the stables finally went out. Tempest was counting the horses and the men. They'd saved by then. Jihan was right beside him with her unguents and her froth daughter's touch to help man and horse, freezing Naphtha cold where it stuck to flesh. And with her was Randall, fielding those healing powers a mage could bring to bear. Nico didn't know how many bellowing horses he'd dragged outside to safety. Sacred Banders staggered and stumbled. Wet down, stripped down, covered with soot and ashes, their burned flesh gleaming liquid red. White and angry in the last glow of the flames, or in the torchlight where they treated the wounded. When Nico closed his eyes, all he could see were burned manes, flaring tails, sparks and showers of flaming hay landing everywhere. Red, raw flesh, white melted skin and serum seeping with blackened hide all around. Men and horses dying together because of a spontaneous explosion of naphtha, carefully stored away by men conscious of the risk and trying to preclude it. He couldn't credit it. Perhaps lightning had hit the shed. How many dead men? How many dead horses? How many badly injured? No one knew yet. Please, not my mare. The only thing worse than the sound of terrified horses and men trapped in flames was the smell of the dead ones, roasted alive in there. One of the side barns had been completely engulfed. The west barn, parallel to the gates, smoldered. Some of the best of the stepson horses were in the west stables. It was lucky that 54 mounts had been at the palace. Lucky for all but the horses left behind. Please, please let her be safe. When he could, he needed to go through the stable and identify dead horses and any bodies of men they'd missed. Nothing left in there now could be alive. But even with the torrential rain, it was too soon for that. He walked across the compound where muddy ground mixed with char and over to the main gates. The band had improvised some horse lines. Tempest and Sink and Critias were taking stock of what remained. Some new mercenaries and younger Thebans were holding on to mounts that had come back from the palace. Nico can't assess this loss. It's too horrendous. But he has his job to do. He's grateful not to think too much. He starts with the first horse line where men are picking ashes out of open burns, applying bacon grease and salve where they can. Chorus and Lysis and Artan are sitting on the ground, tearing sheets into bandage. There are tears streaming down Artan's face, unheeded, mixing with the rain. Is she? Thunder peals and peals and peals again as if heaven stamps its foot, enraged. Nico can't bring himself to ask if anyone has seen his mare. He'll find out soon enough. The band has torches stuck in the ground all around. It's hard to keep them lit in the rain. His burned hands, his arms and shoulders and torso sting when raindrops hit melted skin, liquefied flesh and blistered wounds. He walks the first line and sees his black colt. it calls out, a frightened whinny. He goes over to it, where it pulls upon the rope line. They haven't gotten around to treating this horse yet. He's got open wounds on his croup, his tail is singed half off, but his eyes are clear and there's nothing here that can't heal in time with luck. Nico starts to move on by and steps backward, bumping into Lysis. "What is it, Lysis?" he asks absently, still evaluating the damage to his colt. "Oh, Stealth, he's such a wonderful colt!" The young Theban's voice trembles. The boy is shivering in the downpour. "Can I take care of him? I'm sure I can get him well. He's not that badly burnt, and he's so talented."
"Mare, don't be dead, please."
"Tend him as if he's your own. He may well be some day," Nico managed, not really thinking about what he said. Lysis was the one who'd been given a special gift with horses by the Theban goddess, and that reminded him. The goddess had come to ride with them just before the messenger reached them and told them of the fire. Now he wanted to find Harmony. But first he needed to go through the horse lines. First he needed to find his mare. And then it hit him. What life would be like if she'd burned to death in that barn with her unborn foal inside her? While he attended a meaningless celebration on the palace lawn and riled the dream lord. And the rain keeps pounding down. "My Mary's here. She's alive," he promised himself. "She's somewhere on the horse lines. I'd know if she were dead." But she wasn't there. His sable mare was not among any of the horses rescued from the stables. He found Tempest, eventually, working by torchlight on a horse with a badly burned eye. "What do you think, Commander?" Nico called out over a rain so fierce it came down hard and loud and sluiced everything clean, bouncing off the ground when it hit.
"About what? This horse's eye. Maybe we can save it. Or about what happened here?"
his commander growled. Any man of sense would back away from this voice. This was not the Riddler who was reasonable. This was the Riddler of old. That voice was shale sliding into hell, and Nico, despite himself, retreated. "About what happened here?" he had to say. He suspected now what Tempest meant, and he took one more long, backward step right into wrath unending and revenge reserved normally for gods. "You mean you think someone set this fire?" He could barely get the words out, his fists balled until his nails bit his palms. Tempest looked away from that horse to Nico with eyes that blazed like the fire in the stables and said, "Your Mott doesn't know."
"Enlil knows. I know. Let's get these burned horses treated and see if there are any that can't be saved. Then we'll see about taking this war back to the Dream Lord."
Some strangeness in the proportion. "Please, please, Mare, don't be dead." The smell of roast flesh, burnt timber and hay was fading, washed from the air by the rain. He stood silently too long, watching the Riddler. "So, Nico, what is it? There's plenty for you to do on this horse line." "I was looking for my mare." "There," he'd said it. The rain stopped. Above their heads, clouds scudded away. Tempest put down a jar of unguent and wiped his hands on his naked sides. He ducked under the rope and came to Nico.
I haven't seen her. Not out here, or in there. His chin jutted to the stables. Nico didn't have the stomach to look among the dead horses quite yet. There was still a chance she'd escaped somehow. He said, "I'm going to finish up here and then go look inside," very softly. Then he heard hoofbeats behind him and faced the sound. Lit by torch and moonlight, the goddess seemed huge on her black horse. She said, loudly enough for Tempest and Nico to hear her quite clearly, "Stealth called Nicodemus. You want your Ascalonian sable mare?" "I do," he said. "You know I do." "So does your adversary, the Dream Lord," the goddess said, and began to ride away. "She's not dead," his heart leapt. "Did you see her?" The goddess's big black horse stopped. She turned in her saddle. "If she's yours, she's dead. The Dream Lord will kill her if he can't get her back rather than let her succor you. If she's mine, she may yet live. Your choice, Nico." And Harmony rode on down the horse line, leaving Tempest and Nico staring at each other. He asked Tempest, "What does she mean?"
"She means your mare is alive. Perhaps she means that Ash set this fire merely to take your mare away, to punish you. If I were you, I'd give her the mare, no matter what shape the horse is in."
The Riddler had told Nico to keep nothing Ascalonian, no sword, no cuirass, nothing made by the Dream Lord. He'd never thought that included his sable mare, bred by Ascalon. She'd been his for so long. "Your sister brought that mare to me," he reminded Tempest. He didn't say, "as a gift from the Dream Lord," when Ascalon still courted him long ago. Nico remembered Stratton's ghost horse. He didn't want a dead horse brought back to life. And he knew that Tempest might be thinking the same as his commander, hands on hips, watched the goddess disappear into the moonlit darkness. No rain now. The moon shone down, clear and bright, running along the goddess's armor as she rode into the night. Nico hadn't even asked Tempest if anyone knew, yet, how many men had been hurt or killed in the fire. When they found out, he was ashamed that he'd been thinking only of himself, his loss. 6 of the new mercenaries had died in the flames, 3 Thebans, and 1 veteran stepson, overcome by smoke. 12 more had significant burns. They would make pyres tomorrow or the next day when the wood and ground dried out. They pulled the remaining bodies out of the rubble as soon as they could touch them. Nothing is more frightening than a corpse burned beyond recognition but still intact. Smoky teeth in weazened skulls, blackened flesh stuck to bone and holes where eyes had popped. At least they could take all of these to the pyres and burn them again, to pure ash. And Abarsis would come and take their souls away. But it will be much harder to drag out the horses, those sorry, sad carcasses. Men have choices. Horses go where men demand, trusting, always, in the hands that guide them. He went looking for the goddess then, beyond the final horse line. From what Harmony had told him, there was no use in looking for his mare. All was quiet,
but for soft groans and mutters of men and horses, stomping hoofs, swishing tails, and the occasional crack and thud from the ruined stables as weakened timbers tumbled down. She'd come and ridden with them, and then she was gone. And come back again. At last he found Harmony, astride her black stallion, outside the gates, looking at the burned stables from beyond the horse lines. He said, "So much destruction. Surely not only because my mare was here. If you can save her, she's yours." He wanted to ask, "How will you do that? Is she dead? Will you bring her back from beyond Death's Gate? Don't let her suffer. Don't make her suffer." He said instead, "Is she here, with you?" The goddess wore no helmet. Her wet hair was heavy from the rain, dark and slapping in strings against her as she moved. She slid down from the big black and came toward him, holding out the reins. "Here, take him in trade. I'll ride her. And don't worry for her." He took the reins of her black stallion. First he was so relieved he couldn't speak. Then he wanted to ask her what she had done to him, whether he was still the man he'd been before. He didn't. He just looked into those eyes of her reflecting torchlight or moonlight. He asked, "Can I see her again? And you, again?" Harmony said, "We will be where you came to find your mare when she was last lost to you, in the house off the general's road." Until then, he'd never really connected the woman who'd found his mare and his dancing girl. He remembered now. "Look," she said, and held out her hand. Out of the darkness into the moonlight ambled his sable mare, or her sable mare, or the ghost of his mare, or his immortalized mare. If his life hung in the balance, he couldn't have said which one this mare was. The mare stopped between them, saddled, bridled, no sign of burns or harm, and snuffled, took one step toward him. He held out a hand to stop her. She wasn't his mare any more. If this mare came up to him, put her head against his chest, shoved him softly with her nose, then he might be unable to give her up. And then his mare would be truly lost, lost to the Lord of Dream and Shadow. Harmony said, "Go to her, Nico. Say what you wish to her. She's a warhorse. You'll see her again in the days to come." He didn't. He couldn't. "No, you take her. She's yours now." He had the black stud's reins in his hands. She swung up on his mare. "So are you," he thought she said. Then loud enough that he was sure she spoke, "No one can harm her. She's with me now." And he wondered if it would be the same for him. As she rode away, the sable mare's long tail swishing from side to side in the light of the moon. Now it is bright, now it is dry, now there is not a cloud in the sky. Now the sun shines down at midday. Tempest thinks it unseemly that the heavens should make such a display of themselves today.
"She gave you what? Him?
and trade for that old pregnant mare? Would she like one of mine? Has she got another one of those?
Strat asks Nico.
Everyone is half-naked, hauling charred chunks of horse out of the ruined stables. Tempest has to stop himself from trying to protect Nico. But Strat means well. Bravado is all there is to hold on to in the face of so many men and horses dead for no reason, or for reasons no one wants to face. The Dream Lord and Shamshi, striking out with cowardly battle, hurting innocent animals to hurt the sacred band. And Nico says,
"Breed to him, Ace. You, Grit, the band, you can bring mares to him as you please, at no cost."
"It's still early in the season. If he's really a horse, not a figment, maybe he'll breed true. He's got everything a horse should have. Thick mane, thick tail, and back broad enough for any one of you."
Walking away from the little group clustered admiringly around the black stallion, Nico calls back over his shoulder,
"Try him out."
Tempest half expects to look around and find the black horse gone, with the goddess astride him that stud had often vanished in the blink of an eye. Beyond the goddess-given stallion outside the charred stables, Randall has been working with four sacred banders, levitating horse forequarters and horse haunches and floating them toward the gate and through it to a mass gravesite prepared for 14 horses. Too many carcasses, too much flesh for the funerary pyres. So the band will bury their mounts all together in the earth. A herd of ghost horses for the afterlife. Nico has almost nothing of his own now, Tempest is keenly aware. His right side partner had few enough possessions before. With his sable mare and his panoply from Ascalon gone, Nico has very little to anchor him. A few young horses not ready for war. Bits of arms and armor, trusty but old and worn. Nico has never collected trophies. He uses mostly service panoplies, steps on issue. Tempest knows his second-in-command needs a tether, while his soul spins in the winds of change, and Tempest must provide it somehow. But what will stabilize Nicodemus won't be in the realm of the body. It must be in the realm of the soul. Nico came over to him where he watched the clean-up arduous and just beginning. His right man fixed him with an unblinking stare.
"Why don't you take the black stallion, Commander? I've been riding yours so long, I don't need a horse like him."
"Don't give away a gift from your goddess, Nico. For your sake and ours, don't insult her. Not now with Theomachy raging."
"I didn't think of it that way,"
Nico whispered, chary and withdrawn, wearing a tunic despite the heat. The burns on his hands, his legs, and his arms were healing fast, too fast, scabbing up at an unnatural rate. Hence the tunic, to hide the flesh already healed on his torso. Nico scratched at his left forearm absently. Flakes fell away from new pink skin, bright against his deep tan.
"How did you sleep, Stealth?" Tempest recognized the signs. He understood healing. A real gift from Nico's goddess, one that a man couldn't give away, or even wish away.
So Nico had the gift of healing now. Good. And this stepson of his, who for so long had had nothing, wanted nothing, asked for nothing, now had this great horse, fit for a general or a conqueror or a deity.